Last year, the number of Catholic priests worldwide declined for the first time in a decade, according to the Vatican. Nowhere is this decline being felt more than in the Amazon. In some of its most remote areas, Catholics will sometimes have to wait months between Masses, sometimes years. So, in an effort to boost the number of clergy there, a group of Catholic bishops gathered at the Vatican in October to recommend that Pope Francis allow married men in the Amazon to become priests. They also suggested he let women serve as deacons. But that won't be happening anytime soon. Last Wednesday, Francis finally responded to the bishop's request. In a papal letter, he sidestepped the issue entirely.
He didn't say no to either issue. He didn't say no, clearly, to the idea of ordaining married men, nor did he say no to the idea of ordaining women to the Holy Order of Diaconate. On the other hand, I think he missed a golden opportunity to say yes.
That's Thomas Groom, a professor of theology at Boston College and author of the book Faith for the Heart. The Pope's letter was ultimately a tribute to the Amazon, its rainforest, and its people. As the first Latin American pope, he's been concerned about the environmental destruction of the region for a long time. And his recent document hits that message home, according to Michelle Dillon, a professor of sociology at the University of New Hampshire and the author of Post-Secular Catholicism.
So it's full of beautiful affirmations of the dignity of indigenous peoples, as well as the importance of recognizing what they bring to the church and how the church can learn from them.
Still, the Pope's decision on the issue of celibacy, or rather the absence of one, came as a disappointment for many progressive Catholics. For more on this, I turned to Thomas and Michelle, the professors you just heard. I started by asking Michelle if she was surprised by Pope Francis's decision to not address the question of priestly celibacy, especially since he's been portrayed as much more progressive than his predecessors.
Not really. I think there was obviously a lot of anticipation, but as we've seen in the past, when any of these, what are theologically hot-button, but also politically and culturally hot-button issues, the Pope tends to be somewhat cautious.
There is a common misconception, though, that celibacy is doctrine in the Catholic Church, correct?
Never has been and never will be. We regularly ordain married people to the priesthood, people who have been Anglican or Episcopalian, Lutherans. We've many that over 100 married priests in the United States in the Roman Communion. And then the Eastern Orthodox, the Eastern Catholic traditions, they've never agreed to the obligatory celibacy. And of course, the Church existed for over 1,000 years, for almost 1,100 years, without a celibate priesthood. It was only about in the middle of the 12th century that it became a universal law of the Western Church. So, and of course, the tradition is that all of the apostles were married, and for the possible exception of St. John. This is a particular discipline that may have served the Church well at one point in time, but it would look as if it no longer serves the Church well. And especially in light of Vatican II's reclaiming of the spirituality of marriage. I mean, Vatican II talked about marriage as a call to holiness of life, as a consecration before God. That's language that was used only of the vowed religious life before. Now the Church uses it of married life. So people say, well, you know, marriage is a valid vocation for spiritual, for holiness of life, etc. So why do we then say it has to necessarily be excluded? Now, if some people want to be celibate, I would always want to support that. But there's no need whatsoever. In fact, it's very ill-advised at this point to make that a requirement of diocesan priests.
Michelle, what are the arguments for maintaining this tradition of celibacy?
Well, I think the argument is that, you know, priests, by taking a vow of celibacy, are dedicating themselves completely to the Church and to serving the Church and the people of the Church, rather than having, you know, split loyalties, if you will, toward, you know, toward a wife and family. But in part, also, there's an irony here, because one could argue that perhaps the Church should maintain the vow of celibacy and the expectation of that as a discipline, but why not move toward looking at ordaining women? I mean, this is what's interesting. Many women, you know, in this country and other countries, feel a call to ordination, and they're not asking to be ordained as married priests, they're asking to be ordained as priests and to take a vow of celibacy. So when we get into these debates, it really sort of illuminates all kinds of tensions within Church teaching about sexuality and sexual behavior, but also then about gender and what gender entails. And this whole debate has many issues that shine a light on really what I say is, what does it mean to be Catholic and how does the Church want to be as it goes forward? I mean, what does it really want to prioritize?
Michelle, the Catholic Church was considering this for the Amazon because they're suffering from a huge shortage of priests. Is there a real link between the vow of celibacy and the shortage that we're seeing?
Well, I think in the particular context of the Amazon, it is, you know, it's just a bigger problem as such, largely because the Amazon covers, you know, so many different countries and such a large swath of difficult terrain. So therefore, it really does seem that there truly is a shortage of priests. In the context of the American society, there is a shortage, but in part that shortage is because Americans are so used to having so many priests serving in a parish. You know, I think celibacy has to be one factor because, as I said, I think being a priest is a lonely life. There's a lot of spiritual and material, if you will, and social affirmation to some extent. But ultimately, you really can't be in an intimate relationship. And I think in today's world, with such an emphasis on relationality, not just sexuality, but relationality, that certainly puts a dampening effect on young men who might be considering entering the priesthood.
Some of the coverage suggests this is a victory, if you will, by conservatives in the church who oppose Pope Francis. Is that a fair reading?
Well, I don't think we should see these debates or issues in terms of a victory, you know, winners and losers, even though I know that's how the headlines and in part that's what media tend to emphasize are the conflicts that emerge and how this feeds into one camp. But it really goes to the question of what is the identity of the Catholic Church going forward? You know, ultimately, what is more important? Is it more important and what's more critical to Catholic identity? Is it having access to participate fully in the sacraments of the church and in particular to the Eucharist? Is that more important or less important than who it is that actually consecrates the Eucharist at Mass, whether that be a married man or, of course, a woman priest?
We've seen certain dioceses in the U.S., for instance, shrinking, at least from lack of attendance and the like. Does the church lose priests because of these traditions?
Well, I think so, because, you know, we see it's a lonely life being a priest, but that's part of the sacrifice in a sense. And of course, for many decades, being a priest was a very nice, you know, occupational path. But in the post-war and post-Vatican II era, with so many upwardly mobile channels available to Catholic men, I think the priesthood obviously has lost out. But it's not just because of the occupational demands of being a priest. I think it's also because of the challenges that the church itself as an institution has faced in an increasingly secular world.
Now, Thomas, you were a priest in the Catholic Church, but ultimately decided to leave the priesthood. Did the vow of celibacy factor into your decision?
It was a part of it, but only a part. I didn't see it as a needed lifestyle. And I also had the unique opportunity of continuing to do a great deal of 90%, 95% of the work I was doing as a priest, in fact, was as a professor of theology and religious education. So in some ways, I simply had to stop celebrating the Eucharist in public and or in private either. That was about the biggest adjustment. I did miss that. I loved to preach and to preside prayerfully, I hope. And it was a part of that era and as a part of that time 35 years ago. That over 25,000 priests in the United States alone between 1970 and 1990, over 25,000 priests resigned priesthood. And I would say 95-98% of them was to get married and have a family because they didn't see the requirement as necessary or saw themselves as called with a vocation to priesthood, but not with a vocation to the celibate and the vowed life. The celibacy issue obviously was a challenge and one that I didn't see the value of. For me, it could be a source of holiness of life for some people, but it wasn't for me. It wasn't bringing me closer to God or making me a more faithful Christian.
I'm sure many people at least subconsciously connect the two things, some not so subconsciously. Is there any evidence supporting a link between celibacy and what we've seen with the sexual abuse crisis in the church?
The research does not indicate that there's any cause-effect between sex abuse and celibacy. On the other hand, in the public realm, I think there is serious consideration and suspicion at times about the sexuality of priests and so on. Even good priests, I know that try and do indeed live this commitment very faithfully, will tell you very readily that they're under suspicion, that they too can come under disapproval and what have you. I have an old priest friend in Dublin who says that when he was first ordained, if he walked down O'Connell Street, people would salute him. Good morning, Father. Good morning, Father. Now he walks down O'Connell Street, he can get spat on. So there's been a dreadful demise in the image of priesthood. That's so tragic, and especially for good priests that have suffered as a consequence of the dreadful scandals and the dreadful behavior and crimes committed against children.
when it comes to these decisions or the tabling of these decisions by the Pope, what does all this mean for the sustainability and the relevance of the Catholic Church moving forward?
You know, as a religious educator, I've spent my life trying to teach people the wonders of this great faith. And even though its church can sometimes disappoint us and even fail us as a human institution, yet it's a tremendously life-giving faith, a faith that embraces life with great relish and enthusiasm and calls us to live it well, both personally and socially. My hope is that we can regroup. We will come into a better time. I think modernity was particularly unkind to Christian values. I think postmodernity is more open to the spiritual. I mean, it's epitomized in my young people at Boston College who go around saying, I'm spiritual but not religious. But I see that as a positive, that they're taking their soul, their own spiritual center seriously. And I think hopefully Catholicism can step in and be present to them with a very rich spirituality.
Thomas Groom is a professor of theology at Boston College and author of the book Faith for the Heart. And Michelle Dillon is a professor of sociology at the University of New Hampshire and author of Post-Secular Catholicism. Thank you both for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.